go, everybody. Hello, it is Bill Buckmaster in the driver's seat, and on the other side of the glass, Tom Fairbanks.
Not in the driver's seat.
Not in the driver's seat. A lot to unpack today. It is February the 14th, 2024, a Wednesday. Today is Ash Wednesday, one of the holiest days on the Christian calendar, and this coincides with, of course, Valentine's Day, and that has only happened, that concurrence, twice since 1945. And today is Arizona Statehood Day. It is the 112th birthday. I think my math is right there. February 14th, 1912. Arizona known as the Valentine's Day State. We're going to talk more in the second half of the program with our faith and spirituality contributor about the kind of rare concurrence about Ash Wednesday and Valentine's Day. We'll talk with Father Robert Hendrickson from St. Philip's about that. But we've got Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our program in our 14th year now. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news and talk. Councilman, how are you today?
Bill, great to be on. I'm doing well. Thank you so much. It's a beautiful day in Tucson, Arizona.
Really is. We were talking about your father, actually, yesterday on the program. We had the folks from the Grand Canyon Institute, which is a nonpartisan think tank. They're based up in Phoenix, but of course, your father, George Cunningham, one of the founders of the Grand Canyon Institute, and we were talking about, oh my gosh, how many years of public service that your dad has put in for this state, not only as a lawmaker, but as the chief of staff to Governor Napolitano. Was he also the chief of staff for Rose Mofford as well?
He was.
Yeah.
He was the chief of staff for Rose Mofford. He was vice president of the university. He was basically their CFO in the mid-'80s. And he was also director of lobbying. He was their chief lobbyist for a while as well. He then served in the state legislature. Tomorrow, he turned 79 years old.
Wow.
So I want to give a big shout out to my dad. We're actually going out to dinner as a family tomorrow night. And my dad's first professional job, if you can believe it, was the deputy town manager of the city of South Tucson, of the town of South Tucson.
I did not know.
In 1968.
Wow.
He was also serving at the time in the local reserve unit, the 8th Battalion, 40th Armor. In 1993, I was in the Army Reserve, and I was also in the 8th Battalion, 40th Armor. So my dad and I have a pretty interesting bond. He and my mom together, my mom, Marjorie, his bride of over 50 years now, since 1969. With a local attorney here who served as a Girl Scout leader. She was president of the PTA. I mean, my mom was, they were both just amazing, amazing people. And they are my go-tos. They are my ride or dies. If I need perspective, if I need anything, to have that phone call puts me as one of the luckiest guys in the world that I can call my parents when I need advice about how to make our community better and how to make the city of Tucson better.
Well, did you want to go into public service because of what your dad, the example that he led for you, Paul?
Well, I believed in public service. I wasn't sure. When I was young, when I was under 25, I thought I was going to run for office. And in 2000, my dad ran for Congress, and he ran against Jim Colby, who was actually a pretty effective congressman, and my dad lost. And one of the things that happened was I kind of soured a little bit on politics. I didn't really want to be a guy who ran for office. I just wanted to be a public servant. I was a probation officer at the time. I was also coaching basketball and just enjoying being a public servant. That's kind of where I thought my life was going to take me. Ultimately, in 2002, my dad ran for a statewide office. He ran Corporation Commission, and it was a statewide race. He was from Tucson. He was a Democrat, which at that time was almost impossible to win a statewide race, and he lost, especially down ballot. And he only lost by a couple hundred votes. I mean, it was really, really close. And he had a blast on the campaign trail. And one of the things that had happened on the campaign trail is that he'd show up at events and nuanced discussions about public policy, about the state budget would be had, and that the attorney general at the time, Jan Napolitano, was running for governor. And she'd hear my dad speak with constituents and speak with voters and educate them about some of these nuances within the state budget, and that's why she tapped him to be her chief of staff. So, and she had like three chiefs of staff, so he wasn't the lone one, but that's why she tapped him. A weird story that I just kind of wanted to tell people, because this is the times we live in, where we have so much division between the parties. In 2010, obviously, or 2009, the governor, Governor Napolitano, took the job as Secretary of Homeland Security. And my dad was still working in the governor's office, kind of just trying to help with the budget. And a couple people who probably were giving him bad advice said, well, don't talk to the governor, pack up your stuff and leave. And he was like, I actually served with Jan and we're friends and maybe I could help her. And he then got a letter about a couple, you know, about 3 weeks later, he got a letter to leave, even though he'd pretty much already left, as such transitions in new parties when they take over the governor's office. He ran into Governor Brewer a few years later, and she said, you should have come and talked to me. I definitely would have kept you. And so that's the type of reputation he had as a public servant in understanding how to make our state work. And I'm just proud of my dad every day. And obviously my mom too. And so that's the legacy that I have to live up to. And hopefully I don't fail too bad at doing that.
Well, it's a good day for you to do those kudos and shout outs on this day about love on Valentine's Day. So I'm glad you were able to do that publicly on the show. Paul, speak a little bit louder into your phone. It's just the cell is not that great connection today.
I'm so sorry, Bill. Is this a little bit better?
Yeah, that's better. That's better. I want to hear you, and our listeners want to hear you. I'm a little confused about this vote to put, well, I don't know if it even was a vote. Was it to put a special election in August for city voters? Can you clear this up?
Sure. So we're kind of just trying to leave our options open. We want to take a look at maybe it's coming up where we can renew a sales tax, and there's a statute that forces us to do it in a regular election year. We want to test on whether or not we can do that in March or August, or can we do that in November? We also want to take a look at whether or not that law stands, because there's been two new interpretations of it. So that's one piece. The second piece is that the public safety piece in expanding some of our community health and wellness will probably need some extra resources as their mission has kind of evolved over the past few years. So we're taking a look at that as well. So that's kind of why we put this on the ballot. Again, whatever we put on the ballot will be super transparent. Will be every dollar will be, the voters will know. We've learned that if you're going to put any type of tax on the ballot ever, whether it's continuing a tax or renewing a tax that's set to expire, you better be accountable to the voters on what you're spending the money on and what it's for. So we obviously do that. But right now, we don't even know if we're allowed to have one on the primary day. So we're trying to test that out, and that's kind of the start. That's this process.
There's nothing to do with transportation, though, on the – there would nothing
could. I mean, you don't know. It could. It just depends on again, that would mean that we'd probably not want to join the RTA. I mean, that would be where that would go. I don't know if that's the number one aim right now. It's definitely part of the discussion where if we have to go it alone at some point, maybe we go it alone with this provision. So that's part of the discussion. Again, as I've said, I've wanted to find a very good balance on how we go with the RTA, but we've got some requirements and some things we want in the RTA that we think are important. And if it's a bad deal for Tucson, we have to have the option to explore our own initiative. And so that's kind of the piece there. But again, more importantly, by going and taking a look at whether or not we can even have an election in August and not November, and test what that law's the merit of what that law is, it's just, it allows us to leave our options open for whatever we want to do. And that's the main point of this.
Barbara Coffey was on our show, the economic developer, as you well know, for the city of Tucson. Boy, I was very impressed with this woman who is running economic development for the city. She was my one-on-one guest on Monday. She's talking about that the GEM show, not only is it a big deal for Tucson, it is now far and away the number one generator for tourism money for this community.
Yes, and it's getting bigger and bigger. It's also like one of the top GEM shows in the world right now. Our February and March have always been a thing, but man, it's come back with a vengeance. We've done really well in the, we have three things going between Martin Luther King Day and rodeo. We have the Fort Little Shootout, then we have the GEM show, and then we also have, towards on the tail end of that, we have the Tucson Invitational Games, and we have some spring training for junior colleges, Division II, Division III, even some NCAA teams that come out for like preseason training for softball, baseball, some of those sports where, weather is a requirement. Even though we got some crazy snow and rain and not typical, guess what? It's 72 degrees today, man, with snow-capped mountains on the north end. So we have a beautiful place that people come out to, and this is the 'tis the season, as they say. It was funny you mentioned that Statehood Day and Ash Wednesday and Valentine's Day all coincided and converged. That's kind of like this season for us every year. And I think we'll continue in that tradition and in that way. And I'm really proud of what has happened, because if you go back to the recession and losing spring break training at the same time, you would have thought the bottom had fallen out of the boat here in Tucson. And here we are, just crushing it for the third year in a row. It helps with our seasonal employment numbers. We've got more Tucsonans punching paychecks than we ever had in the history of Tucson.
All right, Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman. Stick around for segment number two on this Arizona Statehood Day, the 112th birthday for the Grand Canyon State. Paul sticks around. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and we have three, I guess you could call them, dates of note. Some, I think you could call St. Valentine's Day a holiday. Then, of course, we have Ash Wednesday, and then we have Statehood Day. Arizona is the Valentine's Day state. So we got three things going on here today. And we've got on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. And it looks like the city had been pushing very hard, along with Tucson Water and Arizona's congressional delegation, to get the Department of Defense to move forward on both Davis-Monthan Air Force Base and the Morris Air National Guard facilities here in Tucson, move forward with trying to get some help, remediation on what on these issues that are called forever PFABs. They're forever chemicals. Was this good news, Paul Cunningham?
100%. I mean, it's a good thing. That we've been waiting for a while for this. We knew that the Air Force and us and the city were going to settle up on some of this stuff. This is a good plan moving forward. I don't think we're ever going to really be able to contain or remediate all the PFAS, but we are so on top of it. I mean, every single time we detect it, we know the actual number of parts per trillion. We are constantly monitoring it, and the best part about it is that the folks who kind of are responsible, which is definitely what happened at Davis-Monthan and at the airport, are helping pay the bill for it. So it's not being stuck to the Tucson ratepayers. And so I think we're in the right position. I think we've tried to – I really want to hand it to Tim Telmier, who probably he's currently our deputy city manager, and rightly so, but he's also the former water director. And his team, along with John Kimmick and his team, he's the current Tucson Water Director, but even going back before that, because they've been so meticulous about following this PFAS issue and being sure that we are responding to it properly and prudently.
Paul Cunningham is with us on our live line. Want to talk a little bit right now before we continue our conversation about my favorite bakery in town. Are you much for bakery goods, Councilman?
100%. I've actually been up there because of your show.
Yeah.
I visited the Danish Bakery. So, you know, every single time you interview me, you plug it. And so, of course, we go check it out, and it's still one of the best places you can go in town.
Thank you very much. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. And they do have the liquor license now, and it is fully being utilized. We talk a lot about breakfast, but they do a nice lunch up there as well. Would you like a beer, perhaps? they are doing, they're pouring, I believe, Peroni, which is an Italian beer by the bottle. And they're doing mimosas, champagne, and orange juice for breakfast. They've also got a large selection, a growing selection of wine. So Mona's Danish Bakery now open for adult beverages to go with your breakfast and lunch. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. So I know that the city council has been looking at trying to crack down on what you would call blighted properties. We all know them. We see them around town. Is there much that can be done about these properties?
Well, there are certain things. If they become a health hazard, if they become a safety hazard, if they are not... If they're being used by people and they're being encroached on, but it's affecting the quality of life or the quality of commerce in the by their neighbors, then yes, there are definitely things that we're protected by the Constitution to be able to do. But it isn't all that easy. There's always nuances to it. Sometimes you have areas in which the issue is happening, but it's in a public right of way, or you have issues in which the property is going through a transition in ownership and nobody seems to know who's responsible, or there's multiple partners and multiple corporations. So those nuances make the situation much more complicated. But by having an ordinance and having a mechanism in which we can respond and reach out to the property owners about issues at blighted properties, it definitely gets the wheel works moving to be able to address issues when they come up.
We do have Mr. Ortega. Mike Ortega has decided he is going to retire from the city. He's certainly, I'm sure, not done with maybe he is done as far as working. I don't know. I know he loves to woodwork as kind of a hobby, but who knows what he'll do after his retirement. And you mentioned Tim Tomier, who is number two in line, and Tim's going to, I'm sure, be the acting. When does the council expect to make a decision on that, Paul Cunningham?
I think we're going to have a very proper timetable. We're going to do a proper screening process to some degree, but for the most part, anybody who really understands this succession plan for Tim has been, it's been around for a minute. I think we kind of all have planned that he'd take over. I think he's earned it. He is an outstanding public servant. And the idea that we have someone, the idea that we have a backup quarterback like Tim Tomier, who can take the reins full, is just a blessing for Tucson. I think we won't miss a beat. This is what succession plans are for. It's similar to when we had Deputy Chief Kazmar, when Chief Cat Magnus was leaving. It's a similar situation. We have a person in place to take over, and you if you're doing it right and planning for those contingencies, you can make a very, very seamless transition, and that's what we're looking for. And I think Tim's the answer to that. Again, I don't want to speak for my colleagues. I don't want to just make assumptions, but I'm pretty sure that that's where this is going to be headed.
Now, the city council does have a bigger payday as the voters decided that you all deserve more money. What have you decided about your own personal future? I'm sure you're torn because you are an educator and you love going to work and working with young people, but you also, voters want a full-time city councilman.
Yeah, so I'm going to finish this school year. I think I owe it to the kids for that. I think I owe it to the school I work for that. So I'm definitely going to finish this school year. I've been toying with the idea of maybe working a partial schedule next year, and trying to kind of thread the needle a little bit and have the best of both worlds. I think to some degree, by teaching in the area that I'm also a council person, I make some extra connections to neighbors and voters and parents and kind of get a better pulse for what the area is. But the voters have voted a full-time raise for the council members, and they expect full-time council at work. So I've got to make sure that whatever the schedule is, it's not going to interfere at all with my duties. And I'm not sure if I'm going to be doing both. If it is, it will definitely be in a more limited capacity. But for the most part, I know that I'm going to finish this school year and probably try to kind of gradually ease out. I'd figure by the end of the next academic year, I probably won't be teaching at all.
All right. Paul Cunningham, all the best to you. And please give my regards and the community's regards to your father, George Cunningham, who turns 79 years old tomorrow. Give him my best, please.
Thank you so much, Bill, for having me on. This was one of I know you've had my favorite bit. Some other shows are your favorite visit of mine on your show, but this was my favorite visit to be able to talk about my mom and dad. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All right, Paul Cunningham with us. Next, Father Robert will join us talking about Ash Wednesday, Valentine's Day, and putting it all together. The concurrence next.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition, and lots to unpack today. Statehood Day, we've got Ash Wednesday, and we have Valentine's Day. But before we get into all of that, this would be a perfect day if you can carve out some time to go buy green things. Wow, after those really nice, productive, robust rains, things are looking good. All the plants over at Green Things looking especially sharp today at 3384 East River Road. Their 13-acre site is meticulously run by Jan and Jack, my friends who own the property and the business. And a couple of years ago, they expanded with Zocalo Village, bringing in imported items, beautiful things from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe, including the largest selection, I think, in the Southwest of pottery, not only from Mexico, but they were on the island of Crete, Jan and Jack, and they found a supplier over there and had all these incredible pots brought back from the island of Crete. So it's like a United Nations of pottery over at Green Things. GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, that is sponsored by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Valentine's Day falling on Ash Wednesday this week, today. It is a rare occurrence that has prompted many Christian leaders and Christians to ponder the best way to observe them both. Valentine's Day, of course, is known for indulging in candy. Ash Wednesday is known for giving it up. So what gives? Many people give up candy for Lent, but Valentine's Day is the biggest chocolate gift-giving day of the year. And before 2018, the two holidays hadn't fallen on the same day since 1945. Now that I say two holidays, I kind of want to question whether you could call Ash Wednesday a holiday, but I'm going to defer to Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, which I am happy to call my spiritual home here in Southern Arizona. Father Robert, always a pleasure, my friend.
It's great to be with you. Thanks, Bill.
So is it a holiday, Ash Wednesday?
Well, if you consider the root of the word holiday is holy day, then absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So some of your thoughts. Let's kind of unpack this. We think of Valentine's Day, and I did some research about who St. Valentine was. He was a priest in Rome during the reign of Emperor Claudius II. And Claudius was trying to enlist enough soldiers for his army, so he was telling the men, hey, you got to go serve. And the men were reluctant to leave their wives and families. So Claudius banned marriages and engagements, and Valentine defied the edict and continued to perform marriages. So anyway, it's about love. And then you have Ash Wednesday, which, can we say it? There is a love component as well?
You know, absolutely. I mean, the interesting thing, I think, about the convergence of the two is that it really reminds us that, you know, our time is short, right? And so if you think what's the I think the most dangerous thing in most relationships is apathy, right? That the sort of forgetting of the preciousness of a relationship, or the forgetting of how short our time is together on this earth to love one another. And so I think that what Ash Wednesday does is it frames love within the context of mortality, and frames our mortality within the context of eternal love, right? It helps us sort of have a better sense of how we can reorient our lives. You know, so for example, when you come up for ashes in the church, we say, remember that thou art dust, and to dust thou shalt return. And that remember is not just about remembering your mortality. It's about remembering who you were created to be, remembering it is who you're called to be in your relationships. If you're a person of faith, who you're called to be as a person of faith. Remembering what it means to be human, what it means to not take shortcuts in our day-to-day life, remembering that we're called to cherish one another and to love one another in a patient, kind, loving way. And that, you know, our entire life kind of militates against that kind of patience and that kind of appreciation for one another. And so I think Lent and Ash Wednesday in particular, that periodic reminder that we all need to sort of recalibrate ourselves and remember what it is we're about and what's most precious to us.
Could you give us a little background about why we do have the ashes and or the ash in the sign of the cross is placed on the forehead? How did all that come about?
Well, it comes about relatively early in Christian history. I mean, we have documentation to the Middle Ages, but earlier than that, we suspect in various places. But it begins the 40 days of Lent, right, which sort of is to mirror the 40 days of Jesus's wandering in the wilderness and sort of temptations in the wilderness. And as we in history, that 40 days was a preparation for baptism at Easter, and so Christians would spend, you know, sometimes in the early church years in preparation, and then these 40 days before Easter were the kind of final culmination of that years long time of preparation to be baptized, because if you remember what Christians in the early church were being baptized into, I mean, they were literally being told, come be baptized so that you can be martyred, right? I mean, what they were being told is Christ bids us to come and die, as Dietrich Bonhoeffer says. And that's, you know, the reality was they could go into the Colosseum, or they could be martyred, you know, at the drop of a hat, like St. Valentine mm-hmm. was. Mm-hmm. And so this time of preparation was really crucial. And it was that reminder that this choice to follow Jesus is a costly one and could cost you your life, right? And so that pondering of mortality and that preparation for that reality was all part of that Lenten journey.
Yeah, and you mentioned, and I didn't really finish the story, and I should have, about what happened to Valentine and why he became a saint. He died.
Yes, he was martyred on February 14th, so that's how we have, in, I think, 269, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we have February 14th as Valentine's Day.
So the idea of fasting, where does that come from? I assume that it is best to fast on Ash Wednesday. Is that preferred?
It is preferred. So the custom is that you sort of drink clear liquids through the day into the evening. That does not mean you can have gin or vodka, I hasten to add. So generally it's just sort of water. Some of us take a little shortcut and have coffee, you know, maybe light coffee. But the idea is that, you know, with all these sort of things, you know, whether it's fasting or giving up something for Lent, it's really about coming to appreciate those things again, right? So you know, when you mindlessly consume anything, you lose an appreciation of it, right? Of how unique it is. The example I always use is vanilla, right? We use the word vanilla as a kind of word for every kind of commonplace thing in the mm-hmm. world. But actually, vanilla is this extraordinarily expensive, extraordinarily rare commodity. And so you know, when you spend time really appreciating it, you suddenly think, oh, vanilla is quite impressive, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like anything else in our life. The things that come to be too commonplace are things that we take for granted. And so part of what we're called to do is, A, appreciate those things in our life, but B, look for ways that things, actions, habits in our life are distancing us from one another and from God. So let's say we've developed some habit in our life of being, you know, too quick to judge and too snarky or whatever it is. You know, that takes a toll on relationships, right? And so part of our Lenten journey might be to remind ourselves to maybe take the extra second before we say something that's a little too cutting or a little too cruel. But it might be that you know, our sitting in a recliner drinking six beers at night isn't great for our relationship.
No.
Right? You know, so kind of identifying those habits and patterns and examining why they have become habits and patterns, and then reflecting on is this habit or pattern or way of being creating distance between me and God? And if it is, how do I sort of, for a period, eliminate that and then reassess its importance and how I either appreciate or need to get rid of that particular thing?
Well, for this Lenten season, which is, as many have known about, I am on a grief journey. It'll be 6 months already since my beloved Anne died. That would be, that anniversary is coming up on Saturday. And I've decided for Lent, I am going to work on patience. I've always been a very impatient person. Maybe it has something to do with the news business, trying to get the story, and I want I want quick results. And I'm probably not alone in our society, Father Robert, on that one, right? We've become a very instant society.
Absolutely. There's a constant pressure, to deliver immediately. I mean, to be available to everyone at all hours, at all times, and all that. I don't think those pressures really lead to a sort of well-examined life where we kind of take the time to assess where things are. And so I think that's a great, I think that reminder
reflection
to yourself.
Reflection of on trying to be more patient. That will be in my daily reflection that I do during this Lenten period. Let's talk more with Father Robert Hendrickson. After we take a break on the Buckmaster Show, we will be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Boy, we're unpacking a lot here on Valentine's Day 2024. Of course, it is also Ash Wednesday, and it's Statehood Day. Arizona is the Valentine's Day state. Became the state, 1912 on this date. Father Robert Hendrickson is with us, and we'll get back to that conversation with Father Robert in a moment. But first, I want to tell our listeners, they hear me talking a lot about Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. It's not a bad drive at all, and a lot to do. hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, and they have some outstanding Victorian architecture in Silver City. And if you're into museums, they've got a great little museum at Western New Mexico University, and they have the finest collection of Mimbres pottery from, let me see if I can get this right, maybe the 12th or 13th century, the folks who, the early ancestors in that area. So check it out. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with our conversation with Father Robert Hendrickson, who is very busy. He's busy every day, but he's very busy today. Of course, Ash Wednesday, kicking off Lent. He is the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, where I am proud to be a member. It's a very welcoming place, and we always welcome Father Robert, who is our faith and spirituality contributor. He joins 24 other contributors, regular contributors to the program, that I'm very thankful that they're part of our program. All right, Valentine's Day. Some folks feel, oh my gosh, I got to get through Valentine's Day. I don't have a significant other in my life, or for whatever reason, maybe have gone through a divorce or a recent death, as has been the case in my life. There's a lot of lonely people out there, Father Robert, on this day, and not just this day, but every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of amazing what we're realizing about the impact of loneliness on health and just sort of well-being. I mean, the government in the UK has created a sort of ministry for loneliness to address this as a healthcare epidemic. You know, the estimated impact of sort of being chronically alone, which really means you haven't had a significant conversation with someone in 6 months. That's kind of how it's defined. Is as if you smoked 15 cigarettes a day. That's
wow.
Considered the health impact in terms of stress, impact on heart, impact on other aspects of health. And so it's more than just a sort of, a kind of sense or whatever. It's actually having, I think, a real impact on our well-being and our health. And I don't think that the kind of chronic loneliness in our culture is disconnected from the chronic anxiety in our culture and the sort of, the finding of other forms of community online or in other places where sort of unhealthy dynamics are sort of perpetuated, where we sort of forget real relationships and sort of get, caught up in all kinds of stuff online or whatever. So I think I think that this impact is just being really, really realized now. And I think the impact of COVID, I think has made people even more acutely aware of it because there are many folks I talked to who were, alone before COVID, but then COVID just dramatically escalated the impact of that on people's health and well-being.
What can we do about it, Father Robert?
I think sort of to remind ourselves that no one's doing as well as we think. I mean, it's one of those very simple sort of truths of life that everybody sort of puts on a front and sort of, oh, I'm fine. And, yet I think that
you'll see very happy people walking along, maybe at the grocery store or something, and you're going, boy, I wonder what the secret is to that. But we all got problems, right? We don't know what's going on.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So I think, sort of being gentle with people and sort of remind ourselves to reach out and connect with people. I frequently find myself, I will wake up in the morning, and I'll have a little nudge to write to somebody or to respond to somebody or to reach out to someone and follow that nudge. I mean, don't let it drop, because I think those come from either from deep within our sort of our own sensibilities, the Spirit sort of provides them and sort of calls us to reach out to someone. And so follow those nudges. And I suspect that the more we do that, the more we remember how important those relationships are. I find myself, I'll reconnect with a family member I haven't seen in years, and suddenly, A, it feels like we're picking up right where we left off, but also you're reminded, you think, well, why isn't this the norm? Why isn't this mm-hmm. kind of way of being in a relationship just the kind of norm as opposed to the exception in our culture, which it seems to be the exception too often.
So again, the definition of loneliness, at least I think from the UK is what again? Repeat that.
I'm trying to remember the exact definition, but okay. Basically it was that you hadn't had a significant conversation with a close relative or friend for 6 months.
Wow.
That seems extreme.
Yeah.
But I remember I was serving as chaplain in a hospital, and I sort of reached out to sort of, you know, hold someone's hand in the hospital bed. And then, you know, I sort of went to pull away, and she grabbed on tighter. She said, no one other than a doctor has touched me in 3 months.
Oh, my gosh.
And just think, just that basic human touch that we take for granted. Again, sort of that back to that question of what do we take for granted?
Yes.
And that, you know, that touch, conversation, meals together, all those things that sort of make up the bread and butter of daily life, quickly become, really, really precious when we realize that we're lacking them.
And just meeting a friend for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and then giving the friend a hug, I bet that kind of gets the good stuff, the endorphins, I think they're called, gets them going in the right direction, Father Robert.
Yeah, I mean, we sort of know that sort of touch, connection, all of that sort of stuff rapidly reorients our spirit. And sort of very, very quickly changes us from a kind of, you know, myopic obsession with how sad we are, how alone we are. It quickly changes, it reminds us of the fundamental goodness of people around us and how much we need one another.
So what's on your mind this Lenten season? I know that there's a lot going through your mind, and I'm just wondering, and I know we've talked over the years, Easter's really important to you, and Lent is important to you. What's on your mind this Lenten season in 2024?
Yeah, you know, I can't believe that we're going into the third election cycle of my time as rector here. and I don't feel like this one's going to be any more gentle or kind than the previous few now.
You have a lot of disenchanted people.
A lot of disenchanted people.
Happy with the candidates. And
yeah, absolutely.
It goes on and on.
And a lot of angry people.
Yes.
Right? And so to me, it's like what I'm anxious about is at some point we have decided in our culture that it's more important for us to be right than to be in relationship with one another. And I think it's deadly, I think, but both to our democracy and to just us, our own spirit. I don't think it can bear that kind of anger for very long. And to have a whole culture that's sort of being fed that constantly through the media, it requires, I think, an act of sort of determined resistance to that kind of provocation to despise one another, mm-hmm. and to distrust one another. Mm-hmm. And so as we go into this sort of season, I'm trying to figure out how do we encourage people to sort of reconnect with an awareness of the fundamental goodness of their neighbor, mm-hmm. Which is sort of what we're constantly being called to in Scripture. Jesus doesn't go around and say, oh, you know, love the people you love a lot more. He says, love your enemies, right?
I mean, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And so how do we not just, you know, not just sort of love those with whom we disagree, but realize that in our disagreement, we might find some comprehension of the truth together, that we might just not always be right all the time, and that the relationship may show us something that's more true about ourselves and about the world.
All right. Father Robert Hendrickson, what are you doing for Ash Wednesday? Is there a service tonight?
Yes, after I go buy some black roses for my wife.
Black roses.
I'll be going to church and telling people they're remember their mortality, and then go home and have something other than clear liquid.
Yeah, 6 o'clock. You're doing
6 o'clock tonight. Yeah.
Okay, at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, Father Robert. Blessings to you as always. Thank you, sir.
To you as well, Bill.
All right. On behalf of Father Robert and Tom, who always does such a great job for us, he's on the other side of the glass in the control room, and we thank Tom for his efforts. Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well.